This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 High FM.
Good morning, everybody. This is The Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector, your host, as usual. And today's guest, Greg Jaspers. Greg is teaches at the University of Western Michigan, which is well known for its music programs. And he's here in South Africa for several weeks, where he has been a Fulbright specialist, Fulbright program, exchange program specialist from the United States government in support of the University of the Witwatersrand's music program, especially its vocal jazz teaching and performance. And he's been working with students and with some of the professors and lecturers, build up the program further. And we caught up with him the morning after the final performance of students and some of the instructors to bring the program to a full conclusion. Greg's no stranger to South Africa. This is his third time in the country, and he studied at the University of Western Michigan, and then on to the University of Miami, the one in Florida, for his master's. And now he's back at Western Michigan teaching. We talked with him the morning after the final performance, as I said. He's due to leave shortly. And we thought it would be a lot of fun to find out what he thinks, not so much about that one program, but about the entire field of jazz music and its relationship to modern teaching, and the kinds of things that drove him or enticed him into becoming interested in that music. Greg, tell me, when did you discover vocal jazz for yourself? When did you discover that was your calling?
Great question, Brooks. Thank you. I can tell you exactly when. It was in February of 1990. I had transferred to Western Michigan University, where I now teach, and I had not yet heard the collegiate group there, Gold Company, sing. And I went to their big show, and heard them sing. And the minute they started the concert, the bug bit right then and there. And I didn't know it would turn into everything it has already, but that was the moment for sure. They came out and sang. They sang, because that's important, especially for any vocal jazz lovers. But they started with Gene Perling's You Are the Sunshine of My Life. And Gene is, of course, the legendary arranger for the very well-known vocal group, The Singers Unlimited.
You discovered your bliss right then and there in a concert hall. And, you know, it was like a smack across the head that said, this is you.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny to discover that and sort of know that, but also have no idea what that means, you know. But yeah, that was the moment.
And up until that moment, you were a heavy metal fan, am I right?
Yeah. You know, I have such an eclectic music background. I grew up in a pretty conservative reform denomination in Michigan. And so there were a lot of, you know, a lot of hymns, a lot of organ music. Then I was in classical piano lessons, but at the same time, I loved listening to the radio and picking up songs by ear. And then my parents went down a sort of Christian contemporary rabbit hole, but then they moved to more gospel. And then we had Andre Crouch and Richard Smallwood playing. And I think that gospel influence really was sort of another bridge into jazz without knowing it, because, you know, the harmonies in gospel music lean more towards jazz than just traditional, you know, pop music. And then I started actually attending sporadically, but I would go to Bethel Pentecostal Church in downtown Grand Rapids, the city outside where I was growing up, and just to listen to the music and just to hear more of that gospel music. And then when I heard jazz, then that really took me all the way in, I should say.
Well, I mean, gospel music has a lot of the I don't want to quite call it extemporaneousness, but a lot of the improvisational texture to it that jazz does, and they both come ultimately from the same musical roots. So it's not like you were traversing to an entirely alien country. When we talk about the influences on you as a musician, and we understand exactly when and where the bolt of lightning struck over your lifetime career, who have been the biggest musical influences on you? I detected last night when we watched your final performance, a leaning toward the Great American Songbook, but I'm sure that the influences on you are that plus and plus and plus.
Definitely. Yeah, when I was a student at Western, where I now teach, the New York Voices came through on, I think, their second ever tour. And of course, again, I was just absolutely smitten with their sound. And I listened to them as much as I could. So I was listening to them and to the New York Voices. And then Take Six was on the scene, and that sound is unlike any other. And so I'd say those three groups from a vocal jazz standpoint. I'm also really influenced by, I guess we would call it jazz fusion, but the Yellow Jackets, the band the Yellow Jackets, Pat Metheny, and the big group stuff, the really sort of almost orchestral stuff. Diane Reeves as a jazz vocalist has always been a big influence on me. And lately I've been working with and really learning a lot more about Brazilian jazz. And I've been working with a Brazilian guitarist named Chico Pinheiro. And of course I came to him by hearing his music too, and just falling in love with the rhythm and the sound and the lines. And there's no shortage of music to explore, and you just find yourself going down these different rabbit holes. So pretty exciting.
Well, that keeps you fresh, as opposed to just repeating the same worn groove over and over again. You hear new things and you go, aha, I want to take that on board as well.
Yeah, it's one of those things, a musician will often complain that they don't have a gig, but then when they get a gig, they'll complain because it's the same gig over and over again. So it's a blessing to be busy and to not be doing the same thing and always be sort of engaged and curious on different levels. This residency here in Joburg at Wits has opened my eyes to all kinds of other things here that, I probably could not have discovered on my own by just Googling things. And so, listening to what other people are listening to. I've got a bunch of artists. I can't even tell you all their names. I've just like saved one song of theirs in my Apple Music, so it reminds me to really go down that rabbit hole, as I return back to America.
I mean, I'm not a musician, but I've listened to music in all over the world, and I had one of those epiphany moments in Madagascar, of all places, where one of the most popular musicians in that country, that island, whose name I'm going to butcher badly, so I'm not going to try to do it right for you. She and her accompanying band took the rock classic "Be My Baby," turned it into a Malagash styled music. And it was one of the, you're like, whoa, I can't believe just how far that piece of music has transcended its roots and still at the same time, captured your interest and your attention and the foot stomping and the clapping as well. Travel, you've come to South Africa three times now, I gather. Each time you've discovered new and interesting musics and musicians. We had to do a song list, a playlist, your favorite South African musicians, or the most influential ones in the way in your thinking. Who would you put them down to?
Oh boy.
I know we have hours for this, but
No, I'm just looking at the playlist that I made already, and I have more to do. But for example, I was teaching co-teaching a voice lesson, I think my first week here, and I asked the student what they wanted to work on, and the teacher, they brought out a lead sheet of a song called "Inner Peace," and the harmony is. It's not your basic, jazz standard 2-5-1 kind of harmony. And so the teacher said, I don't know if you might be able to be, more of service at the piano. So I jumped on the piano and was playing through these chord changes and listening to the singer sing the melody. And I was just, I was just smitten right away. I'm probably not gonna pronounce it, Tembum Kize, is his name. And so I went to go find that piece. And of course, then I found all kinds of his recordings. And then, so that's one, that's probably like the biggest impression on me that I've made. I've been listening to, those wonderful artists that we heard last night in the concert, Mimi and Gabby, and we didn't get to hear Lindiwe, but the projects that have been created by these South African jazz singers that are teaching at WITS are really wonderful, and it's just fun to hear their music. Of course, I had to download all of Just Six's music to really get a sense of that. I got to meet them last Friday at a workshop, and they sang a little bit, but they were missing their sixth member, so it was fun to hear them last night with all six. So I'm going to listen to all of that. See what else I have here.
Ray, we're going to take a quick station break in the meantime. This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, your host, and my guest today, Greg Jaspers, from Western Michigan University, doing an artist in residence at WITS, a Fulbright artist in residence. He's just finished it up, and we'll be right back after these messages.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
Discover the delightful symphony of flavors at Friends Bakery in Sandringham. Every Friday, indulge in fresh-baked flavored challahs like za'atar, homemade, and classic loaves, all perfect for Shabbat. Try the V Friends Bakery new pretzel challah. You'll be a fan for life. For a limited time, enjoy free taster samples when you purchase your challah. Place your order easily via WhatsApp at 076-108-0085 and taste the difference that has everyone's taste buds buzzing. Visit Friends Bakery in Sandringham today and treat your taste buds to something extraordinary. This is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector. My guest today, Greg Jaspers, Western Michigan University, but importantly, in South Africa, finishing up a jazz residency, a jazz voice residency at WITS. And we got to hear with him the students and teachers he has been working with at WITS in music. One of the things that puzzles me, and it worries me a little bit, because my daughter is also a musician. One of my daughters is a musician. Lives in Cape Town, and she transverses the field from pop standards to serious jazz to her own compositions. But the worry I think a lot of people have, even in that genre, is that it's actually a dying art form now that it has become academic and based in formal conservatories and in concert halls like Juilliard and places like that, that jazz has now become locked into a box somehow, and it's lost the quality that it had when it was in downstairs smoky clubs and places where you had to make sure you know where you were going to find it. Am I in the right direction, or can you rebut that for me?
The answer to that question is yes and yes. You are, that is definitely a legitimate concern, and I'm happy to rebut that. But, we've been talking about that a lot at WITS, and just first of all, acknowledging how great it is that jazz is allowed into classrooms and concert halls that were once reserved for just classical music, curriculums that were just reserved for classical music, and degrees that were just reserved for classical music. And so that's great. But as you're pointing out, one of the unintended consequences of that is that we lose all of the energy around this music that does not fit into those structures. And that's been one of my sort of pillars of importance in my curriculum and how I teach is, maintaining and acknowledging and exploring always the oral tradition of this music, the importance of listening to it, of learning by ear from our elders and those who've come before us. And I think there are a lot of people who are working to preserve that at the same time that they are teaching in academic institutions. And so I don't think that, so my rebuttal really is it is in classrooms and academic institutions. That doesn't mean that it's not still here as well. And for example, I live in a small town that's very, very arts oriented, and our students play out almost every night of the week in small little coffee shops and, tiny little concert rooms, and they continue to sort of cultivate that grassroots element of the music, the collaborativeness of the music, the playing with whoever will show up kind of element of the music. And I think they're doing a great job of taking what they're learning, but implementing it into the real life jazz, sort of setting. So I'm not worried that it's not that we're losing the spirit of what this music has been. I tend to, I mean, you wouldn't be surprised at my answer as an academic, but I tend to think that, I mean, that my that the academic element just further props up the legitimacy of this music. When you were talking about your moment in Madagascar, that is the ability of a musician, not just a jazz musician, but jazz as an art form really equips people to do what you observed in Madagascar, and that is play with the elements, understand rhythm, melody, and harmony, reconstruct it in the moment with other people who are of like mind and like ear, and see what happens. And I know I have some classical colleagues who think that, we're just making noise, but they also have not been trained in that way of understanding music and then getting up on the high wire and seeing what happens. It could all come crashing down, but it could also just be that moment that you had experienced, and I think it's one of the highest art forms. And here at WITS and at my school, we're really focused on giving our students the tools to enter into those music-making settings, and have tools available to them that allow them to respond, to play, to contribute, and to listen. So I think it's just a much bigger picture now that it's also in academic institutions.
Well, those critics that you were talking about, those classical snobs, they probably would have been aghast back in the 1920s at Aeolian Hall when Rhapsody in Blue was first given to the world. It wasn't jazz; it was classical music of a sort, but it incorporated a whole range of jazz motifs and styles and textures. And yet it was all written down as a score, so it wasn't as if it was, somebody improvising. But the critics were of mixed minds about the piece of music, although it gets played at every concert hall in the world probably has seen it and heard it performed now.
Exactly. It's one thing, it's also interesting to remember that the music we are studying now, and as we understand it now in today's musical landscape, Ella Fitzgerald and Billie Holiday were the original Taylor Swifts. I mean, that was the pop music of the day, and then when rock and roll came in, and jazz sort of got pushed to the side a little bit. Yeah, it's an interesting perspective to have about where this music once was, and then how do we continue educating audiences? I always feel like, I mean, when I first started listening to jazz, when I didn't know anything about it, it just felt like an inside joke, and I was definitely on the outside, and because I didn't have any apparatus or framework for understanding the musical conversation that I was hearing. And so I really tend to encourage our students and to create concerts and even concert etiquette so that someone in the audience just learns one thing about jazz. So they get one more level or layer of being able to understand what's happening musically and might be inclined to come back because they know a little bit more about it. So.
One of the performance groups in this country, really ever, Malambo, which goes back to the, in its various incarnations, goes back to the 1960s. And it was at various points, it was a guitar, traditional percussion duo. The name Philip Tabani will be familiar to some of our listeners, but to many, many South Africans. One of the trademark pieces of music he played with was in a country garden of all things. And he would start on an, with his electric guitar in a country garden, the way you would remember it. And then he would go somewhere else entirely for minutes at a time. And his accompanying percussionist, I actually watched him once stop and look at the guitarist. Where are we going with this? And then suddenly he returned back to the original in a country garden as if nothing had happened. It was a powerful demonstration of the elasticity or the flexibility of the art form.
That sounds about right. Last night when we had to start Prelude to sorry, Flowers of Love, Something one more time. I was at my undergraduate degree is classical piano performance, and that was exactly the moment you were horrified if it ever happened, and when you're in the audience and you're listening to classical music and you realize someone has forgotten, they've just gone up on their memory, it's just such a horrible experience even as an audience member. And in jazz, it's just not, you just go, where are we going? Where are you going with this? And let's bring it back to here and let's start again. I never mind those moments either because I want our students to always see these experiments and these ideas, and they don't always work out the first time, but that's real life and that's humanity and that's making music together. And so you start again, or you redirect the guitarist, or you just check in with other people on stage, and you continue making music.
We're going to take another station break. This is the Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector. We're having a conversation with Greg Jaspers, artistic residence in jazz, vocal jazz performance from Western Michigan University as part of the Fulbright program. And he's just finished up the residency, and we'll be right back after this message.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem pharmacies. Better health starts here. This is the Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and my guest today, Greg Jaspers. And we've been talking about the way in which jazz performance can take you to places you hadn't actually thought you were going to get to, and then usually get you back to where you started so that you knew who you were still. But one of the things I worry about performance, with people in jazz performance, and as I say, I have a daughter who does this kind of thing, but she also teaches business of music to students at one of the academies in Cape Town, because it is clear that most musicians, most performers in this country are ill-prepared to grapple with the management aspect, the business end of things, the spreadsheet version of what they do or want to do. They want to be a star, they want to perform, but they have to keep track of all this other stuff to make it certain that they won't starve to death in the process. Do American universities prepare students adequately in this regard? I'm not sure South African universities do, but is there more preparation in America for this kind of thing?
I think there is more preparation, perhaps. I'm not a, you know, I don't have a clear picture of what all the preparation is here in South Africa, but But there are entrepreneurial classes, there's music business classes, and in a lot of cases, you know, especially in my case, I came to teaching after an 18-year run of being a freelance musician in Chicago and Los Angeles, and so, you know, many of my colleagues have similar backstories, and so we can, you know, even informally share our experience and train our students about the business side of things. The business is ever changing, as you know, and so that's always a challenge. But I wouldn't say that all of our students are 100% adequately prepared. Our teaching loads in most cases are pretty full with just the actual music instruction. We sometimes have workshops or sort of professional development seminars at the end of semesters and stuff to just give our students a chance to just think about all the non-musical things that are important to think about. My teaching all the time is infused with the perspective that in order for today's musician to be successful, you've just mentioned all of it regarding your daughter. We're going to do a variety of things all the time. I call it your sort of pie existence, where this slice of the pie is performing, and this slice of the pie is teaching, and this slice of the pie is writing, and whatever, whatever. Everybody's pie is going to look a little bit different. But actually, nobody that we, you know, even Samara Joy does not just sing. And she does workshops, and Kurt Elling does workshops and explores lots of different collaborations. And so some of the artists at the very top of this field are having a pie kind of existence. And I wouldn't even say that that's out of necessity, but it's partly to sustain your creativity. So you are engaged on lots of different channels, and that keeps you fresh as an artist as well. But I think there's always room to grow in terms of professional development and the non-musical skills required to sustain a professional musical career.
We've been speaking with Greg Jasperska, Western Michigan University, Kalamazoo, and I keep saying that for a reason. I'm going to tie off at the end here with this. And he's been in South Africa as a Fulbright artistic Fulbrighter in residence at University of the Witwatersrand for 3 weeks. I was looking last night after I came back from your program performance for a classic rendition of the tune, Kalamazoo to Timbuktu. Do you know it?
I don't know that tune.
Oh, look it up when you get
Okay.
back. There's a wonderful recording by Mitch Miller and company of all people.
Yeah.
It started out as a child's book, and I was looking at it only because it just seemed eerily appropriate to you. You're from Kalamazoo. Now, you didn't go to Timbuktu, but you went to Johannesburg, and too many syllables there, but you went to Africa. And I thought that if you can find it, there might be some creative thought there for you to listen to it, to play with it, perhaps even to incorporate it into your musical repertoire. We've been speaking with Greg Jasperse of Western Michigan University, but in South Africa, for a 3 week artistic residency under the Fulbright program at the University of the Witwatersrand in Johannesburg. And this is the Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and we will be back again next week with a different topic. I don't know whether it'll be nuclear physics or whether it'll be international relations or perhaps a retrospective on the Donald Trump, Cyril Ramaphosa meeting in Washington, but we'll do something. We try to keep it varied so you never quite know what we're going to do. And we'll finish off and remind you that if you listen on Friday, as you are now, if you didn't catch all the program, you can re-listen to it or tell your friends. On Sunday morning, it's rebroadcast at 10. And of course, it's podcast so that you can listen to it anytime, anywhere. This is Brooke Spector, and thank you for listening, and have a good weekend.